calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Hello and welcome to the EDP Formula One podcast. My name is Michael Bailey and I am here with our delectable panel to sift through what was a compelling Canadian Grand Prix and, for Lewis Hamilton at least, a return to past glories in more ways than one. Around the Archant Towers table for our Montreal pod, I have the editor of Gridwalk TV, David Tillier. Hello there, David.
Hello, how's it going?
Yeah, we're good. We're good here in a chilly Archant Towers. Summer still hasn't arrived. Still waiting. I've also got a beaming Lewis Hamilton fan in Ben Weaver. How are you doing there, Ben?
Very well, thank you, very well.
Good man, good man. And my erstwhile pod colleague, Perry Hamilton.
Hello. Perry. Hello indeed. And just to clear something up very quickly, I have been asked, and no, Lewis and I, no relation.
That's good. I was wondering.
Yeah, you know, it's people have asked, but no relations. I want to clear that.
Really? Because the resemblance is striking.
I know, to you audio listeners.
There you go.
You wouldn't know.
Right then, first things first, the man of the moment at the venue where he won his first Grand Prix back in 2007. A drive where Lewis took his strategy and made it work for him as others around tried to gamble their way through it. How good was his drive, David?
Pretty epic, to be honest. Canada has always been, you know, probably top three of my favourite Grand Prix. And Hamilton sort of demonstrated why it is in that top three, because you can, you know, just pull off some epic overtaking manoeuvres, and you can really, you know, if you're a sort of Hamilton-esque driver, you can really sort of impress. But no, he was quick, he was consistent, he was measured, and he was aggressive. You know, he's kind of quite well rounded now.
I suppose, Ben, there would have been points maybe in past years when the strategy wasn't necessarily working, and those drivers in front of him suddenly weren't pulling off for a second stop when his team had told him that was going to happen. He might have had a wobble.
Yeah, I think it just shows how far he's come. I think he had the 3 second gap over Alonso. He held that really well. He looked after his tyres when he needed to. He even asked over the radio, obviously, about the one stop strategy, and McLaren assured him they would be giving a two stop. When they made the change, he came back out and realised that obviously they weren't going to do the two stop, and it was all out attack mode for the last sort of 10, 15, 20 laps. And he owned it. The last 15 laps was probably the most exciting Grand Prix I've seen for a long, long time. All out attack mode, Lewis Hamilton at his best and chasing down his two main rivals.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. I suppose in the end, the two in front of Lewis, Sebastian Vettel and Fernando Alonso, should have done a two-stop. I mean, as Seb did in the end, because he came in with just a handful of laps left,
yeah.
Still managed to salvage fourth from that. And
I think that was an inspired decision by Red Bull, actually, because when they brought him in, I just thought, well, what's he doing? I said, he's now lost all those places. And then you saw him just start to carve through. You knew he was never going to get back to the front. But that sort of decision, and when they were talking a lot on the commentary about Kimi Raikkonen when his tyres fell off the cliff in a race previous in the season, and he dropped 10 places in one lap. I mean, fortunately for Ferrari and Red Bull respectively, neither of them lost that much on the track, but you could see Alonso just sort of falling behind. And when you look at the decision to bring Vettel in, it actually was quite a smart one.
Although he almost ruined it by putting it into the wall on the last turn.
yes. Quite, yeah, that's a good point. I suppose it wasn't a compelling drive in the way that people were driving into each other and everything was swapping around. It was just the way Lewis went about it, wasn't it, David?
Yeah, I think what we've seen this year is a different kind of racing to what we've been used to in the past. And I think we're all kind of used to it now to a certain extent, although there are quite a few people criticising the sort of the way the tyres are sort of dictating the race as such. But it was exciting from a sort of a different perspective, and it was nice to see lots of different people doing lots of different things rather than everyone kind of having, you know, like a best strategy and then everyone sort of following that suit. But they were doing their own thing, And, you know, impressive to see, you know, people like Perez and Grosjean actually take the one-stop strategy and make it work, unlike Alonso, who did fall off towards the end.
Exactly. I suppose it felt to me like the most mix-and-match kind of Grand Prix in terms of strategy that we'd had for a long time, even though the tyres have obviously played such a big part. Seems like a good point to bring up the podium. I mean, as Sebastian Vettel and Alonso fell away, Romain Grosjean almost came from nowhere. It suddenly became apparent sort of in the second half of the race that he was upwardly mobile, took a fantastic second place on the podium, and Sergio Perez third. He'd probably got good odds on those three, wouldn't you, at the start of the race, making the podium treble?
Yeah, I think you would have. I mean, when you saw the lineup and Lewis got past Alonso, and it was kind of clear that, you know, Lewis wasn't going to get overtaken again by either one of them, you kind of thought, okay, well, I can see that, you know, and you thought Alonso's probably going to be quite happy with that second and keeping Vettel behind him, because he's probably going to then at least stay at the forefront of the lead of the championship. Alonso's not the kind of guy who's ever going to settle for second. He's going to have wanted that first, but he's also quite a smart, cerebral driver. He knows what's needed. But then just to have them drop off, and the thing is, with when you saw Grosjean, we know Perez can do it. We've seen it from Perez. Grosjean's most promising race, as far as I was concerned, his most promising race that he didn't follow through on was the last one we talked about, which was Monaco. He had so much speed, he was right at the front, first corner, bam, he's out. And you've got to wonder what could have been. I think at this race, he showed you what could have been. He's got the pace and he's got the composure, which is that, I mean, when you're coming up on the back of two double world champions and, you know, you're at a very fast circuit where the braking zones going into the corners are absolutely critical. To make those right, I mean, I know you've got the tyres which are fresh, so you should have the speed advantage anyway, but Vettel and Alonso in the past have both proven they're difficult men to pass, even when the car behind them has got fresher tyres.
Grosjean's proving very good once he gets past the first lap, clearly, and then he can do something. He is showing a maturity that clearly winning the GP2 title last year has helped him along with. I suppose the question I asked in my column this week is just how good a car the Lotus is. Is it unfair to suggest that, you know, if you have a Lewis or a Seb in there, that it finishes first regularly? Does anyone, I suppose, this year is the question to that.
But I'd probably say probably slightly unfair to say that, because the car isn't quite there yet. It suited Canada very well because it's very, very easy on its tyres. And it needs the hotter temperatures to operate at its best, because Montreal was quite a bit hotter than what we've had so far. It suited the Lotus really well, and the Lotus struggles to get its tyres up to temperature in the cooler temperatures. So, but because of that, it is very easy on its tyres, and therefore a one-stop strategy can work really well for them. And that's why you saw Grosjean towards the end of the race actually having really good pace, whereas people like Alonso, who were on the same strategy, didn't have the same sort of pace because they had a lot less life left in the tyres because of the way the car handles.
And Grosjean hadn't actually changed his tyres that much later, had he, I think, than Alonso, if I made that up.
No, he had 30 laps left on the last set, didn't he, to do it.
So it's still a fair amount. I'll say that. It's still a fair amount. Eric Boulier, the Lotus team principal, reckons they will get to the bottom of the temperature window issues that they've got in the tyres over the coming races. So we'll have to see if that comes off or not, but it's good to see Lotus doing so well, even though Kimi's probably got a bit of pressure on him at the moment, hasn't he, Ben? I mean, he is a couple of points ahead of Roman in the driver's standings, sort of down in mid-table somewhere, but it's like a spark missing, isn't there? I mean, it's almost getting a bit reminiscent of Michael Schumacher's comeback in a way.
Exactly, and I think that might actually take the pressure off him, that it is his first year back, and he can say, I'm trying to get back into it, like Schumacher did. Schumacher took a season or two to get his eye back in. I think Kimi might be suffering from the same, really. I don't know. I mean, the car is good. Grosjean proves the car's good. Whether Kimi can quite hook it up as well as Grosjean can at the moment and make the tyres work for him, I don't know. Kimi, without a doubt, is a great driver. With the right machinery under him, he should be doing better, obviously, and Grosjean's proven that.
Is he keeping his interest? Is that already an issue?
No, I wouldn't necessarily say that it is. I mean, obviously, a few higher placed finishes would obviously help keep his interest a little bit more, wouldn't it? I mean, that's the whole thing.
Stick.
That whole thing when you're winning kind of attitude. But no, I mean, I understand what you're saying there, Ben, about, you know, it takes him a while to get his eyes in, but let's just remember the last time that Kimi Räikkönen raced a Formula One car was, I believe, back in the end of the 2008 season. Let's just look at all the things that have been added to the cars and all the things that have been removed, all the drive rates that have been taken away from cars, and now he's come in at this season. He's never had to deal with DRS, he's never had to deal with KERS. I mean, they're just two of the improvements or innovations that have been made in the Formula One paddock. So there is a difference there that he's going to have some getting used to. But at the same time, there's no reason why we can't... It is reasonable for us to expect him to make that adjustment quicker. I don't think... I mean, we talked about this a little bit last time out. I don't think it's acceptable for Schumacher to be turning in the performances that he's turning in at the moment. I think, you know, this is another retirement from him, albeit a technical one, at Canada, that still underscores the fact that he's not where he needs to be right now. I'd say Kimi's there or thereabouts, but by the end of the season, looking at how good the car is and looking at how good Kimi can be, if they don't have a win under their belt or at least two wins under their belt from him, I'd say it's a disappointing season for them.
There you go. Setting the bar, Perry, setting the bar. Interesting on Michael Schumacher. I think only none of the drivers at the established teams have fewer points than the two Schumacher has to date, which is not exactly setting the world alight. It was a bit of a cock-up in qualifying as well. I think he just missed the checkered flag, didn't he? Or he was just behind the checkered flag by a few hundredths of a second.
Yeah, very, very slight margin.
I mean, fine lines, but that's coupled with what was clearly going to be a quick lap. Someone else who did actually manage to set a quick lap was Sebastian Vettel, who, of course, started the race on pole. He did seem to have supreme pace in qualifying. Where did that go in the race, David? What happened?
Qualifying pace and race pace are two, you know, quite distinct things. And last year, you know, Red Bull had the whole package because they were clearly sort of head and shoulders above everyone else in terms of the overall package of the car. For whatever reason, on Saturday, Vettel had just blinding pace that no one could touch. But with the tyres this year, with the way that the rules have changed, or the technology that's been taken away, the things that they've had to change in the car, it you know, makes a huge difference to the way that, you know, the driver can extract the performance over the course of a, you know, sort of 60 or 70 odd laps. And for Seb, it was a case of he was quick, but he just didn't have the overall race pace that I think either the McLarens or the Ferraris had, or at least in the hands of Hamilton and Alonso anyway.
So are the teams kind of left with a decision to make on a Friday evening as to whether they set up a race car or a qualifying car, in a way?
I think it's more... it's partly to do with how the car is innately set up. So some cars just have good race pace versus qualifying pace, like the Force Indies, for example, are better over a race distance than they are over a qualifying lap. Saab was, again, very good over a race distance, okay-ish over a qualifying lap. There's always going to be some compromise. If you set your car up for a qualifying lap, it's not going to be great in the race. If you set your car up for you know, race setup, it's not going to be a great qualifying car. You've got to find that balance, and that's where the art is, I guess.
Oh, cracking. The last pod we did, I mentioned that I had a theory on what they could do to qualifying, and then I never actually said what the theory was, so it just left a big old gap in there that probably no one noticed except for me. But is it, in the whole qualifying show, if you wanted to fiddle with it, is there a point to Q2? Is there actually a necessary middle section? What does it do? Obviously, other than knock it down to 10, I know what it actually does, but...
It establishes. I mean, it is important for the midfield racers because it establishes where they're going to start on the grid. And some of those guys can be quick starters off the line. Quick starters off the line, suddenly you find yourself, if you qualify 12th or 13th and you're a quick starter off the line and a couple of the guys in front of you get squeezed and you're into 10th, you work your strategy quite well, that will make the difference between teams like Force India and teams like Toro Rosso picking up 2 or 3 points or picking up no points. So it's important for them. It's just whether they understand, I mean, obviously it's going to sound a little bit odd, but whether they understand its importance to them as well. Because a lot of the times what we're seeing now, and this happens more in Q3 than it does in Q2, but you'll find that teams won't necessarily run in Q2 so that they have the tyres saved for the race, so they can, but then they'll only do, you know, up to three stops anyway. So I don't necessarily understand it to a point, but I still think there's a place for Q2. Usually my place for Q2 is making a cup of tea.
There you go.
Admit that it's not the most gripping of television and it's not the most gripping of Formula One racing. However, it's necessary to establish the pecking order for the teams that aren't even going to have a chance at getting in to the top 10 shootout.
And also at present it does allow Button to find his good position as well.
I reckon Jensen appreciates that too. Well, all I'm saying is they all go out like they do in Q1. It's just rather than just doing the bottom seven, just go all the way up to 11th from Q1 in a 20-minute shootout and then do a 10-minute shootout top 10.
I think there's two reasons for me why I would keep Q2. The first one is it maintains that tension, that sort of anticipation of the shootout. And the second reason would be is it gives people an opportunity to make a mistake. So where you would have, if you just had Q1 and then the top 10 shootout, you know, from 10 through to last place, you've got that set. If you keep the Q2, you could have, you know, a Schumacher, a Button, someone else making these mistakes that allow these smaller teams or the sort of less accomplished drivers to hop up and, you know, create a little bit of interest, something interesting, something different, because otherwise I think we'd almost go back to the old days of having, you know, pretty much set out grids from the off.
Yeah, fair enough. We would have missed Pastor Maldonado going into the wall, obviously.
Exactly.
Again.
Exactly.
Again. Come on then, Ben, you mentioned Jensen. We're going to get there. McLaren probably owed Lewis one and getting one right. But poor Jensen, Monaco, he spent most of it staring at the back of Heikki Kovalainen's Caterham. Canada was arguably worse. Is there something up with him, do you think, or is it, you know, is it just going to come right in a race or two's time?
I really don't know what's going on with Jensen Button at the moment. I think he's proven as a driver at McLaren. I don't know whether he needs the car perfectly set up to get a result, which may be his issue, whereas I think it's recognised that Hamilton makes the best of a bad car when he can. Whether Button can do that, I don't know. I mean, effectively it's the same machinery under him as it is under Lewis Hamilton, barring a few setup changes. To finish 16th is not where he wants to be. I think it's probably one of the worst finishes I've ever seen Jensen Button have since he's been in the McLaren. So
the same venue where he took it from obviously back to
exactly,
front.
It's a complete U-turn from where he was last year. Very different race last year, obviously. But still, you'd expect Jensen to be there or thereabouts. And the last two races, including Monaco, frustration with Kovalainen at Monaco, and here, frustration at the fact that he had to do a three-stop was just shocking. So I don't know. I mean, I can imagine he's fairly unhappy about it, and he's turned into last year's Lewis, having a moan and a whinge. I think he'll be back. May take a couple of races to get the setup right, but I do think he'll be back.
I mean, the Friday was a washout, really, with gearbox issues. Jensen said he felt lost after the race, apparently. I had a good comment made by someone where those who were traditionally thought to be good on their tyres seemed to be struggling with the Pirellis, and those who maybe struggled with the tyres before and would wear them out actually seemed to have a handle on them, which makes no sense logically whatsoever, but seems certainly in Lewis and Jensen's case to be true. What do you reckon, Ben?
Yeah, I see that. Jensen was always known for looking after his tyres and going through the race and handling it quite well. I think there are drivers out there that have shown us that these tyres can last. I mean, obviously, the first name that pops into everyone's head there is Perez. I mean, Sergio Perez can probably use a set of tyres from the previous race and still come in a respectable position. But obviously, there's so much more than just how a driver drives. There's all the mechanical grip as well. And there's all, as you say, like a handful of setup changes. But those setup changes can make such a huge difference, not just to the time, but to the wear that's taken up on everything that has a load put on it when the car goes into a corner or when the car hits a straight. And the tyres are part of that. A lot of curb work as well in Monaco. Not in Monaco. There is a lot of curb work in Monaco. But in Montreal, there's a huge amount of curb work and cars bouncing off of them, you know, left and right and cutting corners, because you're going into the corners so quickly that you just have to take that edge. But you've got to find the right line. Hamilton's aggressive style allows him to do that in the McLaren. Button is a bit more of a perfectionist. And so to him, one or two even millimetres here or there could make the difference between a lap, a set of tyres going four or five laps longer than they normally would.
Is this a major issue then for Jensen, dude? Is this going to hang around for the, well, foreseeable?
It's hard to say because he could just get to the next race and switch it on and, yeah. You know, do really well. I mean, what you've got to bear in mind with Jensen is he is a very particular type of racer. And the fact that he lost, you know, most of his running on Friday will actually hurt him. Some other drivers, they will be able to jump in the car and they'll wrestle it round. Jensen needs to be in the zone. He needs to be in that very, very fine window, you know, setup window. And when he's in that window, he's epic. You know, he finds grip where other people can't find grip. Unfortunately, at the moment, from a consistency point of view, he's not been able to do that so far, or not at least since Australia, I don't think. But with the tyres and the way things are going at the moment, I don't think, you know, you made that comment about people who are good on their tyres and are bad on their tyres and vice versa. I just think it's a lottery, really, to a large extent. Some people who were good on their tyres are still good on their tyres, and some people that were good are now bad. And I just think it's really hard to predict, and I don't think the teams can predict it, let alone someone like me.
But are we enjoying it? Because there have been people who have suggested, oh, well, anyone could win it. It's got nothing to do with anything. It just depends if you rock up and your car goes quickly and no one knows how it goes quickly or why. It's just... Which I don't think is true, and I think the teams will understand it eventually. But, I mean, do any of us have any issues over...
The only issue I had this weekend was Jack Villeneuve. He's so unhappy with everything. The DRS, the KERS, the tyres. He spent the whole weekend whinging on the coverage. And I think even when they were interviewing Lewis Hamilton after the race, he was still saying, oh, it's all about DRS, all about KERS. The move that Hamilton made on Alonso the second time round up the straight, he'd already gone past him before he opened his DRS. So that's down to the tyres, obviously. But I think Jack Villeneuve was summing up what a lot of people have said, like Schumacher in the past, about the tyres and all these added extras, dumbing down the racing. But I don't agree at all. I think people were complaining a year or two ago about procession, and it was just whoever got into the first corner was going to win the race. They've made it more exciting, and now the old school are still complaining about it. I think it's hard to win.
I agree with that, and I think to say anyone can win is taking it a bit too far, because let's look at who the top people in the championship are. Hamilton, world champion. You've got Alonso, double world champion. You've got Vettel, double world champion. And then you drop down to Webber, who's not been a world champion, but he's consistently up there. These are the same names that we've been looking at for the past 3 years. If anyone could win, why aren't some of the backmarkers up there? Why aren't some of the middle guys up there? Yeah. I mean, best chance for that, as we discussed, was at Monaco, if there was a washout. You know, there are places where this can happen if the rain comes down heavily enough. But that's it. You're relying on rain. Montreal, one of the tracks now where we've seen exciting racing last year when it was chucking it down, and this year when it was dry. This is a track that consistently produces. And I think that as long as the season keeps going to tracks and the calendar includes tracks where you can get consistently good racing, the best racers will always come to the top, irrespective of what gadgets and gizmos you put on the car.
Yeah. Well, Caterham is still 1,500-1 to ever win a race, so it's obviously not that much of a lottery at the moment. They did have a quiet one around Montreal. Heikki Kovalainen finished 13 seconds, I believe it was, behind Bruno Senna in his Williams, but two laps ahead of Charles Peake in his Marussia, so that still seems to be actively in no man's land, where they've resided for a little while now. Apparently they have some promising upgrades coming up for Silverstone at the start of July. So you never know.
Well,
good for the Hingham boys.
You know, everyone else has as well.
Well, yeah, isn't that the way? Yeah.
They're not doing too badly. They're only two places behind the McLaren, so...
Yes, this is true, yeah. And 2 points behind Michael Schumacher as well. So both Heikki and Vitali. So you never know. You never know. Perry, you mentioned the driver's standings. Lewis Hamilton leads the championship by 2 points from Fernando Alonso, 3 from Sebastian Vettel, and 9 from Mark Webber in fourth. So there's not a 9 point separating the top four drivers is not bad. The other point I like was that Pastor Maldonado scored 25 points for his win in Spain, and his total overall 7 rounds is 29. So he's not exactly raking in the points since... since then, but there we go. Right, let's have some highlight of the race from each of you. No need to go into huge detail, just give us a little tab. Who wants to go for it? David, you're looking upwards, I'm going to pick you.
I'm looking upwards because I'm trying to think of something. probably just Hamilton all over, really. It was nice to see him winning again. I might be a Button fan first and foremost, but I'm a Hamilton fan as well. And yeah, he was epic and he was good fun to watch.
Certainly was, those final laps. Perry?
Key to the race for me, again, because it's Hamilton, he had the success there, but it was his maturity and his concentration. We saw things from Lewis that even a year ago, even, you know, at the end of last season, less than a year ago, would have scuppered things. Neither of his pit stops were clean. Let's not forget that.
No. I mean,
this is still a team that is struggling with pit stops. He hit the anti-stall twice. Now, you can imagine if that happening twice to Lewis, he might lose his rag a bit. But the bit that really, really summed it up for me is in a post-race interview, he said, when I was going to go past Alonso, I wanted to take him at the hairpin, but I waited because I knew that could be dangerous and I knew that I could get him further along. That kind of patience is something we've not really seen from Lewis. And if he can get that under control consistently, this is a guy who's going to be, you know, again, dominant. He's refound his love of racing. He's got a team that supports him and can be successful. And that, just that kind of on-the-edge, knife-edge decision-making and making the right one, that's something that comes on very rarely.
You can imagine the discipline it took Lewis to not overtake Alonso at the hairpin, can't you? Yeah. Ben?
Well, I'm going to agree that Lewis Hamilton, I think, obviously, as I said earlier, the last 2015 laps were amazing, but also the lap when he came out behind Alonso after the first round of pit stops and just chased Alonso down to make sure he got in the DRS zone ready for that overtake. I think that particular lap was one of the best laps of the race. He just chased Alonso down, knowing he'd lost a place, and reeled him in. Just fantastic.
But I think that lap was, if you could point it down to one thing, that lap is what made the difference. Because it wouldn't take Alonso long to get those tyres up to speed and up to heat. And if he'd have been able to make that Ferrari wide enough, yeah, if he'd have got just that 1.1 seconds ahead going into the DRS zone, we'd have had a completely different look on the race. Completely different. But Hamilton, as you say, he worked so hard to get in there. It was fantastic. I agree with you.
So for want of not having Lewis and McLaren as the driver and teams of the weekend, is anyone, any other nominees for the guys who stood out from the weekend? Did the job?
You obviously mentioned Perez and Grosjean for where they finished. I think Grosjean, I'll give it to Perez over Grosjean in the fact that Grosjean started early and at the beginning of the race he was quite slow. And I think that's what lost him, actually, the opportunity to maybe challenge for the race, as he got held up by a couple of people at the beginning of the race. So I'd probably say after Hamilton, Perez was the driver of the day for me.
There you go. David?
Yeah, I mean, Perez did really, really well. He made up a hell of a lot of places, more places than Grosjean did, I think. But I'd probably say, actually, Vettel was pretty good. I kind of hate to admit it, but amazing pole, just incredible. And he was struggling towards the end. He didn't hold on to his third place, but he managed to pit, claw back fourth, and did pretty well from there on. So, yeah, I'd say if it's not Grosjean, if it's not Perez, it's got to be Vettel. I think
it's unusual where you come away thinking someone's doing a good job when they started first and finished fourth. But I'd agree with that. I thought Seb did have a good weekend. Go on then, Perry.
I'm going to follow the crowd on this one. I'm afraid it's Grosjean for me. Showed the pace, showed the skill, showed the ability, and showed that he belonged. Really, took it. But I sort of touched on him earlier, but I thought he drove an absolutely blinding race. And I'd give team of the weekend, my standout team of the weekend would be Lotus as well. It was, for me, it was a choice between Lotus and Sauber, as we have just been discussing, you know, Grosjean, Perez. But when you look lower down the ranks, Lotus managed to bring it home ahead of Sauber lower down as well. So two point scoring places for them. Solidifies their place in the Constructors' Championship. I think they're sitting even ahead of, like, Mercedes at the moment.
Yeah, third, so, with 108 points.
Indeed, they've already got more points than they had for the entirety of 2011. So,
sorry, Williams, that's not that big a deal.
Well, yeah, true. Indeed. Okay, no GB2 in Canada because it's too far away, let's be honest. So those teams return to action in Spain for the European Grand Prix at Valencia, which is June the 22nd to 24th, or a couple of weeks' time, if you like. Dolesville, Valencia. I can't remember there ever being a good race there, but DRS didn't do much to improve the show there last year. The tyre's going to have more success at it this. There's a few shaking heads.
No.
And grimaces. Are we actually, I mean, are we, what are we expecting? Same old, same old? Which you can tie into your predictions as well, because my half hour deadline is rapidly disappearing.
I'm not a fan of Valencia. They're trying to go with the street circuit kind of thing. It's, you know, it's nice. You'll always get good grip there because it's always nice and warm and sunny and hot and good track temperature. With these tyres, is that going to be a good thing? Who knows? Are these tyres going to chew through too quickly? We'll see. My prediction, I'm going to please the home crowd. I'm going to say Alonso. They looked quick in Canada. Give them a couple, give them, you know, the race to get those improvements under them. If they'd had a correct strategy, if Alonso had kept Hamilton behind him after Hamilton's pit stop, who knows? We could have had Alonso on the top step. They are quick. He is going to be fired up. He knows he's very close to leading that championship. A win for him in his hometown, you know, especially since he didn't always home city, his home country, especially since he couldn't get one in Barcelona.
Fair enough. David?
Well, I mean, I very rarely look forward to Valencia, to be honest. It isn't one of the most fun races. I'm actually not in the country when it's being played this time, so I might not have to put up with it. I might just
sounds like a good plan, that.
Yeah. But prediction wise, I think I'm going to go with Grosjean. I think as long as it's hot, I think Grosjean.
He doesn't put it in the wall on the first lap.
Doesn't put it in the wall. I think Grosjean, maybe Raikkonen. It's hard to say whether or not he'll get his setup right, because he's another one like Button, where he has a very fine window. If he's not happy, then he doesn't do particularly well. Mm. I'm going to go with a bold choice and say Grosjean is going to get his first win.
There we go. I like it. I like your style. Ben?
I will be watching the Valencia Grand Prix. I don't mind it. It's probably the one that I don't really look forward to throughout the season, but it's Grand Prix. So I will watch it, and I'm actually going to go for a momentum win from Montreal onto Valencia. I honestly do think that if Hamilton go into the weekend the same sort of attitude as coming out the back of Montreal, he could do well. I think if he then wins there, moving on to Silverstone, he could put a couple of wins back to back between Montreal, Valencia and Silverstone and get a bit
of steam.
I don't want to sound like I'm on a one track Hamilton fan, but honestly, I think if he can come out of Montreal and carry it into Valencia, it could be a good race for him.
Looking for a Hamilton hat-trick.
Well, you have to say, I mean...
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, is a Hamilton hat-trick, and hopefully Button can help with some of the constructor points as well and move up as well.
If it hadn't been for so many sort of strange errors from McLaren, that car and Lewis should really be...
Exactly, should be clear already.
Well, it's odd, because they had so much pace at the start, but it's kind of disappeared, and there doesn't seem to be any reason for that lack of pace.
We shall see. Do I have to predict? I suppose I can't remember if I make predictions.
Yeah, go on, give it a shot.
Rock the boat.
Yeah, it will be. Can we really have eight winners from eight races? I think maybe the boring, mundane nature of Valencia will suit Sebastian Vettel down to the ground. So there you go. Seb, to do it. Become the first driver to win two races this year, which seems ridiculous, but there we go.
It's not bad. Four different predictions from us.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it? Yeah. We can't all win. great stuff. Okay, well, I think we probably should wrap it up there. Don't forget, you can follow all the news and action regarding Lotus and Caterham throughout the season at edp24.co.uk/F1. You can also read my weekly column there, which runs in the Eastern Daily Press every Wednesday. Twitter time, you can get me at Michael J. Bailey. Perry?
You can get me at PedHD56.
David?
At Gridwalk.
Lovely. Shorter than I was expecting. I don't know why, because I know the address. And Ben?
Mine's at BennyW1980.
Wonderful stuff. Any comments, questions, suggestions, you can get in touch with us here at the podcast, either via those Twitters that we've just given you, Twitter handles, or you can email me, michael.bailey@archant.co.uk, for questions, comments and contributions. And glory be, we are now on iTunes. You can subscribe to this podcast by searching EDP Formula One podcast, or you can use the link, which is bit.ly/EDPF1pod. That seems simpler when I did it to when I've just read it out, but hopefully that'll do the trick. Thanks as always to Perry, David and Ben for all your contributions. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back after Valencia.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.